Hey, is this thing on? Testing. Welcome to the Boost VC podcast, your weekly dose of fun, informative interviews with incredible guests from the Boost VC network. We'll dig into the latest topics around venture capital, startups, and emerging technologies. I'm your host, Adam Draper, founder and managing director of Boost VC and a fourth generation venture capitalist. Are you ready to rock? Tell me what you're gonna do. All right, today we're joined by Will Warren, co-founder of ZeroX, where they're building a protocol for decentralized exchange. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, let's start with what led you to starting a protocol for exchange? Is it a school for protocol exchanges?
I don't think there's any well-paved path for doing this type of thing. I originally was interested in pursuing a career in research. So I studied engineering in undergrad, and then I spent a couple of years working at Los Alamos National Laboratory doing just like basic research stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a doctoral program, also in engineering. So I was kind of just trying to follow this path of doing research that I thought could potentially create a positive impact.
And if you hadn't been working on protocol-based, what was the research that you were doing before this stuff?
Yeah, so my old research group is doing something called structural health monitoring, which is, it's kind of what it sounds like. It's monitoring the health of structures, which could be like airplanes.
Bridges.
Exactly. Yeah. Or like a cooler way of describing it might be like putting a nervous system into a structure.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Is it about like the half-life of decay or something? Like so that you know whether or not it's going to just decompose and break? Like I saw a plane in Brazil or something where the roof came off, like the entire top of the plane came off. Are you
right
judging when that will happen?
Exactly. So you want to be able to say, you know, is this structure damaged and in a condition where it could fail catastrophically?
Got it.
And if it isn't, like, you know, is there damage that could get to that point at some point in the future?
Cool. So how did you get to the blockchain side of the world?
Yeah, so I've been following Bitcoin since 2011. I thought it was interesting. Wasn't entirely sure if Bitcoin was really going to be used for more than sort of the sketchier things it was being used for in the early days. But I thought the technology underlying it was super cool. So I just kind of kept up with it. And Coinbase came around and really legitimized Bitcoin and, you know, its potential use cases. And my fiance actually, she joined Coinbase. She was kind of early on at Coinbase.
Good move.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
As an investor, I'm happy that she's there. Helping the, she's a PM over there.
Yeah, okay. She is now.
Great. So what problem are you trying to solve? Saying a protocol for decentralized exchange are three words.
Right.
What is the actual like problem that's trying to be solved? Like if you're starting a company, if you're starting a project, like there should be a goal. What is it?
Well, before you can understand the goal really well, you kind of have to understand the problem.
Okay.
And the first problem is that these centralized exchanges, these companies that allow you to trade cryptocurrencies, are prone to hacking. So naturally, when you gather hundreds of millions of dollars in cryptocurrency into a centralized location, there's going to be a lot of people that are interested in taking that money. And in the brief history that Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies have existed, there's been multiple examples of centralized exchanges getting hacked and having money stolen. So Mt. Gox was the first one. And then Bitfinex was another somewhat more recently, and then also Shapeshift. All of these different centralized exchanges had many tens of millions of dollars stolen from the customers.
And so the goal is to create something where you don't need the centralized source.
So with a decentralized exchange, the people that are trading on either side of the market retain possession of their crypto.
Does this only work with crypto?
Or
could it work with the New York Stock Exchange?
So it only works with crypto because cryptocurrencies and other digital assets exist on an open financial network, whereas equities and traditional securities are they're maintained on like a proprietary system.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no real way of decentralizing that system. But with blockchains in general, they.
Yeah. But it could be applicable if you were on an open network.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it would take a fundamental change of financial infrastructure, but.
Right, which is going to happen.
Yeah. So you're betting on crypto being the way that the world is built.
Yes. Yeah. The way that value is transferred is going to be very, very different in 10 or 20 years than the current system. It's already changing rapidly.
Mm-hmm. And so you're thinking about doing an ICO, the initial coin offering.
Yeah, we are just saying things.
Okay. So what is that process? So for, I mean, I'm just a, like, if people are listening who are thinking about going through an ICO, like you have done some piece of it. What is that process like?
Yeah, definitely. So the reason why I was laughing is because we're still kind of figuring out the terms of the trade, but the term ICO sometimes has like a derogatory feeling. It feels much more like a securities offering than...
You're thinking about, ICO sounds like a securities offering.
The term ICO.
Yes. What are we offering? What is the thing you're offering then?
So the term used to describe this public distribution of tokens, it has different names. Some people use ICO. Other people call it a token launch or a public token distribution. And the reason why is because generally...
We like the word token over coin.
That could be argued. I think the main reason is because people want to avoid confusion by having sort of regulators look at these protocol tokens and confusing them with traditional securities that are doing like an IPO,
mm-hmm.
And these are very different things.
Okay, so what do you use? What term do you use?
We've been referring to it as like a public token distribution.
So a PTD?
Yes.
You need to be able to brevet, otherwise it's not going to be a thing. Public token distribution. Got it. How is it going through a public token distribution? What is the process?
Right. So I think the process varies based on the project that you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of a wide variety of projects out there and sort of the dynamics of how the token interacts with the product that is being built can really affect how the ICO process works,
mm-hmm.
or the PTD process works.
Yes. Already using the abbreviation. I like it.
Yeah. It happened here first. So if you look at some of these projects that are happening right now, like Tezos or, you know, even Ethereum was started this way. Typically what you do is you come up with an idea, create a white paper that summarizes the idea, the technical merits behind it.
White papers were never as popular as they are when blockchain got involved.
Yes, yes.
It's basically a PPM document now. Like, it's saying, like, hey, this is how our token's going to work. And it's a publicly, like, researched system. And it's like, this is my thesis.
Right.
Yeah.
And the peer review process is carried out by the community. But unfortunately, there's been quite a few projects where the community has not done a good job of peer reviewing.
Yeah, there are a bunch of ICOs, the negative ICOs, that just a bunch of garbage tokens.
Right, yeah. In any case, so the traditional process is that you create a technical white paper that outlines your idea and sort of a roadmap or a development roadmap that establishes your plan for executing this, you know, building whatever system it is that you're proposing.
Mm-hmm.
You receive feedback from the community. And then if there's significant interest by the community in creating this product, whether it's like a brand new blockchain or if it's like a system of smart contracts that lives on a blockchain, then the community can essentially fund the creation of this new, you know, this new technology.
So what is the structure of the, is it a company? Do you have a Delaware C corp, or is it a what is the structure that you actually raise the financing on?
Right. So this also varies by project, and I think we're still sort of figuring out best practices right now.
Got it.
The trend that we have been seeing frequently is that these projects set up a nonprofit foundation in Switzerland,
mm-hmm.
and the nonprofit is responsible for developing open source software, tools and infrastructure, all of these different things that comprise sort of the new blockchain or the new system of smart contracts.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you set up a nonprofit in Switzerland, and then by tokenizing it, people can achieve value, but the actual entity is a nonprofit. That's super weird.
Right. So the difference between, say, and again, this it varies by project and token.
Yeah.
But the idea is that these tokens you're creating aren't generating dividends. They don't yield. They're not an investment. They're not something that yields profits over time or generates revenue like a security. In fact, these protocol tokens are something that are required in order to participate in a protocol, say a blockchain's protocol, or they provide some sort of utility within the system. So in a way, you're selling these tokens to a distributed crowd of people that want to participate in the proposed system.
Got it. Yeah, I think that the really interesting thing that this tokenization system that has ended up happening has done, it's the best way to incentivize people to be working together. Because everyone has ownership stake of this thing.
Right.
And so they're driven by their self-interest as well as the self-interest of everyone in the network to make it better.
Aligned incentives.
Aligned incentives. And like my business is all about aligning incentives, and it's so much better to do it this way. It's like a hack for distribution, and it's super interesting. So that's an aside. But the... So not to give too much promotion to some random law firm that I actually don't know, but I don't know the answer to this, but what law firm do you use? I've looked at a bunch of law firms. I know that there are a couple that focus in sort of these areas, and I was just wondering which one you guys use.
Yeah, so...
if you feel like saying it, I don't know.
Yeah. Care. So yeah. We have a Delaware C Corp based in the U.S. that we've been using for sort of as our starting entity, and we've been using... Perkins Coie, providing legal counsel on the blockchain-related aspects of running this entity. And we are in the process of establishing our nonprofit foundation in Switzerland, and we're working with MME, which is one of the sort of the top legal firm working in crypto projects in Switzerland.
Awesome. So if you had advice for anyone thinking about starting a token or tokenizing or not an ICO, whatever we decided, public distributed offering, what would the advice be? What kind of advice would you give to a person, someone in college who's thinking about creating some new protocol? What would, from when you started working on this till now, you've obviously probably acquired a lot of general knowledge. What advice would you give them to fast forward them a little bit?
Right. Well, I would say think very hard about the problem you're trying to solve. Make sure that you're creating a solution to a problem rather than inventing a problem and trying to solve it. You know, does it really make sense for you to have a token? Could you just sell equity and raise investment through like a traditional VC, you know, startup approach? I think the answer to that is yes. A lot of these projects that have been raising money through the sale of tokens don't necessarily need to fundraise by selling tokens. They could very well just raise capital through a traditional VC fundraise. And
I'm starting to look at, I'm going to call them ICOs because that's the phrase that I've gotten hooked on.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to look at ICOs as a competitor to my business. Like, if you look at the actual numbers, Nick Tomaino actually released some numbers that were like $320 million went into protocols on the market from ICOs in the last 4 months or something. And only 120 went into protocols or blockchain related things through venture capitalists. And so basically looking at it as if it were equity, venture capitalists start to look not as important to the system. And so I'm actually excited about the evolution of venture through this system where it's not only for protocol-based things. It could be equity, but you need to structure the entities accordingly. It can't, if it is equity, it can't be
a protocol token.
And it can't be a nonprofit thing. Like it has to be a corporation. You have to figure out how to do it. And that for profit, I heard Singapore is one of the best structures for it, but there is something. And I think it's great. I think just like competition always drives better products. And I think suddenly like venture capital can't be so like sit back and relax. Like we actually need to change, which is cool. So you gave advice. Oh, where'd you go to college? I don't know if I asked that on the thing. Where'd you go to school?
Yeah, I went to UC San Diego, University of California, San Diego.
And you wanted to be a researcher. Okay, do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on sort of the future of VC and how it kind of intersects with these public fundraising models.
Yeah, so what I'm really excited about is that you're going to Switzerland to actually create this new entity that you're issuing a token on for an open token. That means that the United States, you're using Switzerland rather than the United States. And all of a sudden, the U.S. is losing business because of that. And that's interesting to me. I'm fascinated with global competitive governance because suddenly everyone's going to have to innovate and the best legal structures for doing business are going to win. And so Singapore and Switzerland are going to win. And suddenly there's going to be tons of business going to Singapore and Switzerland, not the United States. The United States is going to have to realize that they're losing and they're going to have to make changes. And I love that. So for venture capital, I see that that's a major trend that's happening. And the real trend, and I think we're identifying it correctly. I don't know. It just the tokenization of securities is what I'm looking at. I'm looking at like,
yes,
literally it is a security. I'm looking at almost all of it as if it's a security, even if it's a nonprofit piece or a software license or a whatever the thing is that people are issuing, because I think Factum is saying it's a software license and you're buying into something, whatever the thing you're buying into is. I'm fascinated with it just as an open transactional. It's the market against the private investors. And I love that. So
yeah,
we're trying to be the first movers in that, or near the first mover. We're not necessarily the first, but into that area, because I don't think I knew this at the beginning when we first got into Bitcoin, but I think that our business is fundamentally changed like forever. And people who are late to the game and understanding that liquidity is the biggest problem in my business. And suddenly tokens have liquidity.
Right.
Like how weird is that? Like suddenly
instant liquidity,
global, as long as there's a buyer, which, you know, there generally is.
Well, if you can open up a market to the entire globe and you don't have to sort of be constrained by artificial
borders
and other limits that are put in place, then it's much easier to find a counterparty.
Freedom of transaction. Like, I think it's very fascinating.
Right. So something that you said I think is really important, and it's something that we'll start to see a lot more of in the next few years. So there's quite a few projects out there that are using a token model to fundraise.
Yeah.
And it seems like people are jumping through quite a few hoops to avoid their token being characterized as a security. And it's really just a way of avoiding securities regulations. And I don't think that's the right approach. I think that, you know, there's nothing wrong with raising capital by selling a security and having that security represented as a token on a public blockchain.
I completely agree.
Yeah. So Delaware just recently...
They're trying to figure it out, yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I think there will be some interesting changes coming up in the next few years when it comes to even representing equities.
And I am really excited about just having answers to that stuff, because... I mean, right now, everyone's sort of, it's the Wild West again. I don't know. We called it the Wild West in Bitcoin like 4 years ago. I feel like it's Wild West again, where everyone's sort of like, they're trying to do what's right, like most of the time. And they're trying, but there's this huge like gray area where there are no real rules. Like no one assumed that there was going to be this global decentralized tokenization thing happening. And so I think that as rules globally do sort of evolve, that's going to be really exciting. So
yeah,
that's what I'm excited. Okay, so the next part of this is it's the lightning round. Because the mic's here, I'm going to leave the computer facing this way. You can see the questions. But I go boom, 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 lightning round. And then I ask you these questions. So ready?
Oh, God.
If you had one superpower, what would it be?
The ability to see into the future.
That's a good one. You know, everyone, you always think that everyone's going to say the same superpower. No one has done the same superpower. It's crazy. Like one person said to say the same, the right thing at the right time. Like that as a superpower. Like always say the right thing at the right time, which I think is brilliant.
Some people can already
very wide. Yeah, I know. Some people have that social hacking thing.
I don't have that power, and that will become apparent very shortly.
If you could have dinner with two people from history, who would they be?
I think, do they have to be alive or dead?
So history. So this would be either. Yeah. How about one of each? Say one living, one dead.
Okay. I think it'd be really cool to have dinner with Barack Obama. That guy seems pretty cool. I think I have to choose two people that are alive in Vitalik Buterin. That guy is
super interesting.
Yeah, he seems like an interesting character.
Yeah, that would be a good Barack and Vitalik would be a very interesting dinner.
Yeah, I'd love to see their interactions.
That would be a dynamic, weird interaction. Like it would be great.
Two people that are very forward thinking, but in extremely different domains.
Completely, I think that would be a really interesting. This is the first time I've actually asked that, but that was a really good answer. I'm going to do that question from now on. What's your favorite place you've ever been?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think probably Singapore in terms of the culture and the city. Yeah, culture and city and food.
It's really good. It's a great city. Good food. The one time I was there, I went to a stand-up comedy show and it was hilarious. So I've had a very positive experience in Singapore as well. You're trapped in an island with one food. What is it?
Burritos. That was the easiest question yet.
Yeah, you didn't know hesitation. The I agree. Yeah, I don't know. I what would be my food? Burger. It'd probably be a burger from the Corner Bistro in New York, and I could do that every day. If there was a movie made about your life, what actor would you have play you?
Oh, actors.
A lot of actors.
I don't know any actors.
Tom Cruise.
There you go.
Okay. Do you watch movies or do you just not know?
I haven't been watching movies.
No, that's good. Your head's down. This is great. You're building things. What's your definition of success?
I think working on intellectual stimulation. So if you can go through life and work on fun and interesting problems, then that's a fulfilling life.
Okay. On that, thank you for being on the Boost VC podcast.
Unfortunately, we don't have enough time for Mark Zuckerberg today, but tune in next week when he's available. Thank you so much for tuning in during your busy day to learn more about emerging technologies. We at Boost VC are happy that you're a part of our community. Make sure to check us out at Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Boost VC, or go to our website www.boost.vc. And remember, love your tribe, hustle every day, and stay true to yourself. This is Adam Draper signing off. Big black eagles flying around this town. One of these days he's gonna pay a visit, drop his load on the ground. What you gonna